We're doing Ein Yaakov. It's a new semester, so we'll quickly introduce it. Ein Yaakov is a distilled version of Talmud, where the Ein Yaakov takes out the stories and the agadic parts of the Talmud. So we ended off last semester where the Talmud had been discussing different laws. The Ein Yaakov had been discussing different laws of how to shower in a public shower, where one has to be modest about one's private parts. We also learned about, maybe we'll quickly review what we saw there. Amemar and Marzutra and Ravashi were sitting together, and they brought before them barda, which was some kind of a perfume which they used to anoint themselves at the end of the meal. So Amemar and Ravashi cleansed their hands with it, and Marzutra didn't. They asked him, why don't you? So one of the students there said he doesn't do it on a weekday or on Shabbos. Meaning they thought he wasn't doing it because it was Shabbos. So one of the students said, no, he doesn't do it on a weekday either, because there's an opinion that says you're not supposed to beautify yourself if you're a man. So then you have to be careful if you're going to be into beautifying yourself, so you're entering the realm of dressing like a woman. A person should be organized, a person should be orderly, but to stand in front of the mirror and get every hair in its place and everything just right, that's already entering the realm of dressing like a woman. So so that's why he wouldn't take this perfume to anoint himself, because he held this is beyond the call of duty. You're going too far. So what did they hold? So they held like the opinion that says a person should cleanse themselves every day, take a shower, wash your hands and feet and face. That was their shower, okay? In honor of our Creator. A person is created in the form of Hashem, and so we're supposed to respect our form and be orderly and nice and clean. So that's one understanding. And furthermore, a person's supposed to be pleasant to look at. When people look at him, they should feel comfortable looking at him. So that's what they held, and that's why they did use this perfume at the end of the meal. They would anoint themselves. And that's where we left off. Amar Ravuna Amar Rav. Okay, now a practical application of that halacha is that men are not supposed to shave their armpits. They're not supposed to shave their arms and legs. You know, men are not supposed to do that. That's hair that women remove. It's part of being female. Okay, Amar Ravuna Amar Rav. Asur latmin et hatzonen. Va'atani Rabbi itur latmin et hatzonen. Rebbe initially permitted people to take cold food and wrap it up. We have two opinions here in the Talmud. Are you allowed to take cold food and wrap it up? We know that on Shabbos you're not allowed to wrap up. You're not allowed to wrap on all sides hot food. You could wrap it on multiple sides, but not on all sides. You're not allowed. That's what's called hatmana. In ancient times, the way they'd keep their food warm was they put it in coals. When you finished baking something, cooking something, so you put it in the coals. That's called hatmana. Piremets. Remets are burning coals. And if people would start burying things or wrapping things to maintain their heat, so they were a footstep away from burying it in the coals, because that's what they did every day. So the rabbis forbade hatmana. The rabbis forbade wrapping a food item on all sides. So on Shabbos, we don't wrap a food item on all sides. Even today, we don't do that. If you want to, you wrap it before Shabbos, and you put it away. So let's say you don't have enough room on your plata, on your hot plate, so you could boil the soup, and then before Shabbos comes in, wrap it in a bunch of blankets, and then the soup maintains its heat going into Shabbos, and then you're okay. Now, what about wrapping cold food that you don't want should heat up? What about insulating it? So you're going to wrap it on all sides on Shabbos. So Rav Huna said in the name of Rav, that's prohibited. The Talmud quoted from Rebbe that it's permitted. So the Talmud quotes the following, that Rebbe was sitting and saying it's prohibited. Initially, Rebbe used to say it's prohibited to wrap cold food to insulate it. And then Rabbi Yishmael Rabbi Yossi said to him, Abba, itir latmin tatzonen. He says, my father, the great Rabbi Yossi, He permitted to insulate cold food, to wrap cold food on Shabbos. Amal kvar hora zaken. So Rebbe said, if that's what your father said, I go back, then I take it back. Then the elder already gave ruling. If that's what Rabbi Yossi said, it's permitted. So from here we see that Rebbe changed his mind. And even though initially we have a quote that Rebbe prohibited it, bottom line, it's permissible if you want to insulate something to maintain its coldness. So that's okay. Amar Rav Papa. So Rav Papa commented, "Vo'urei kama mechabevin zeitze." Take a look at how these two rabbis loved one another. Shilu Rabbi Yossi Kayam, because in the days that Rabbi Yossi was still alive, haya kafuv yoshev lifnei Rebbe. He used to sit in front of Rebbe, listening to Rebbe's class, like a student. Yeah. Da Rabbi Yishmael Rabbi Yossi memalei mekom avotav ava, vekofef yoshev lifnei Rebbe. And how do we know that? Because his son Rabbi Yishmael was on the same level as the father. Sometimes you have that. Usually it doesn't work that way. Sometimes you do. Rabbi Yishmael, the son of Rabbi Yossi, was on the same level, and he would sit in front of Rabbi like a student, listening to class. And yet when Rabbi heard a quote from his father, Rabbi said, I take it back. He said, the elder already gave a ruling, I take it back. So you see how respectful they were of one another? Rabbi Yossi gave all the respect to Rabbi. Rabbi gave all the respect to Rabbi Yossi. Amar li Rav Nachman ledaru avdei. Rav Nachman is a famous rabbi in Talmud. Rav Nachman had a wife who had an opinion in many different things. She's quoted throughout the Talmud. When she got upset at him, she'd say what she had to say. When she got upset at other rabbis, she'd say what she had to say. Sometimes she really gave it to them. We saw stories about his wife earlier in Ein Yaakov. Rav Nachman also had a servant that was famous. His servant was called Daru. So Rav Nachman said to his servant Daru, now Rav Nachman was the generation of Abaye and Rava. Rav Nachman was the head of the court. Rav Nachman was considered a top dayon. Rava, who was Rav Papa's Rebbe, we just saw Rav Papa, so Rava was Rav Papa's Rebbe. Rava would ask his questions to Rav Nachman. So Rav Nachman, when we read Rav Nachman, if it's in monetary matters, so Rav Nachman was considered a top judge, his opinion carries tremendous weight. Now Rav Nachman, we have the following story. Rav Nachman used to tell his servant Daru, At min li tzonin. He used to tell him, you could do hatmana, you could wrap cold food for me on Shabbos, it should stay cold. Remember, they didn't have refrigeration, so if they had cold food from the night, and they didn't want it to go bad, they had to find a way to insulate it, to keep it cold. Ve'ayti li maya de'achin kfeila arama. And bring me water that was heated by a non-Jewish baker. On a weekday, he would take water that was boiled by a non-Jew. Now, we know that the rabbis forbade eating food that was cooked by a non-Jew, what's called bishul akum. You guys know what I'm talking about? The rabbis in the period of the Second Temple, they saw there was a threat of intermarriage. So the rabbis said, we're not allowed to eat food that was baked or cooked by non-Jews, because if you eat your neighbor Sally's chocolate chip cookies, then your son Chaim might end up marrying Sally. So the rabbi said, don't eat her chocolate chip cookies. And if he invites you for a drink at the bar, don't go with him for a drink at the bar. Even though there were many non-Jews living in Israel in the period of the Second Temple, what they saw was that the kids were playing with their non-Jewish neighbor, Mike. And then they ended up intermarrying. They ended up sleeping with Mike. The boys would sleep with the boys. They learned from them that men can sleep with men. They had a big problem in the period of the Second Temple. Little boys were getting attracted to this type of behavior. So the rabbis made all kinds of institutions to try and hold together the family structure. And we saw some of this earlier in Tractate Shabbos. So one of the institutions was that we don't eat baked goods or cooked goods that were baked or cooked by a non-Jew. One of the big questions we have is with tuna fish. The way they make tuna fish is they send these huge ships. They're like 5 times or 10 times the size of this room. No, more than that. More than that. Maybe like 30 times the size of this room. These huge ships go up to Alaska. They fish the tuna fish. And then they can them. And they cook them over there. They actually cook them in the can. The can that you buy can be cooked. It's one of the things they do in the army. They take tuna and oil, and they put a paper on top, and they light it. And then they get hot roasted tuna. So the tuna can is actually a very powerful thing. So the question is, do we consider that food that was cooked by a non-Jew? Can you eat tuna that was cooked in a can by some non-Jew out in Alaska? Right? So you'll say, I don't know who he is, and I don't know Sally, his daughter, so I'm not going to marry her. So there's room to be lenient there. We do say that if it was mass-produced out in Alaska and you're never going to meet the non-Jew, etc. So there is a discussion about being lenient there. But in general, we don't eat cooked or baked goods that were cooked or baked by a non-Jew unless a Jew was involved in the cooking and baking process. Ashkenazim are more mekel. We say we're more lenient. We say it's enough that a Jew had even a slight involvement, like turning on the fire. And the Sephardim are more stringent. That's why Sephardim really have a problem eating at a wedding or some event where you have a non-Jew over the fire making the food. Really, the chief rabbinate has an issue giving kashrus certification there because it's not so good for Sephardim. So Rav Nachman tells his servant Daru on a weekday, get me some boiled water from the local non-Jewish baker. Shama Rav Ami ikpid. Rav Ami, who was one of the rabbis in town, he heard this and he got upset. What's going on here? How did Rav Nachman do that? Amar Rav Yosef, my time ikpid. So Rav Yosef said, what's Rav Nachman getting upset about? Ki rabivata avad. He was just doing what his teachers used to do. Chada ki rav, chada ki Shmuel. He was behaving in line with the tradition he has. One thing he did like his Rebbe Rav, one thing he did like his Rebbe Shmuel. Kishmuel damar v'yudah amar Shmuel mutalat min tatzonen. He behaved like Shmuel. That's what we just said. You're allowed to insulate a cold item to maintain its coolness on Shabbos. That's permitted. Uchi Rav, and the other thing he did like Rav, damar v'yudah Rav Shmuel bar Yitzhak amar Rav. We have the following quote in the name of Rav. Kol shu nechal kmot shu chai, en bo mishum bishulei nochim. Anything that's edible raw, you don't have a problem if a non-Jew cooked it or baked it. So if you have an item that's edible raw, let's say carrots, you can eat raw carrots, right? So if a non-Jew were to cook or bake carrots, that you, assuming all the ingredients were kosher and it was a kosher oven, you'd be permitted to eat those carrots because you don't have a problem. It's edible raw. So water is edible raw. So a non-Jew heated up the water, there's no problem. So why was he upset at him? Rav Ami was upset because he said he's the chief rabbi. When people look at him, they say he got boiled water from the non-Jew. I could buy everything from the non-Jew. They take it 10 steps further. So when someone is in a respectable position, they have to be more careful. They're not allowed to do everything that's permissible for everyone else. That's why Rav Ami was upset at him. So it's interesting. There's this big deal about Starbucks coffee, right? So what issues could we have with Starbucks coffee? So the first issue is they're boiling the water.
And the place is not kosher.
Oh, wait, we'll get there. The second issue is, are the components kosher? So people said that the regular coffee was kosher. That's what they used to say, that the regular coffee was kosher there. So then you have a third problem, that a non-Jew is making you your coffee. That's a third issue. It's a separate issue. So we have another factor with regards to Bishul Nochri, non-Jewish cooking. It has to be something that's ole al shulchan melachim, something that's presentable to kings, that you'd serve at a king's court. So today I think they'd serve coffee. You know, the queen serves tea, so the president would serve coffee, I think. I think that's a respectable drink. But nonetheless, there are opinions that are lenient when it comes to buying coffee at any shop. If it's plain coffee, if it's just regular, whatever they call it, so then if the milk is kosher and the coffee is kosher, and in the United States you don't have a problem. If you go to Europe, you have a problem. If you're buying flavored coffee, you have a problem. If you're buying coffee from a place that's not so clean, you could have a problem. But if you're buying, sometimes they have these, like a makolet. They have a mom and pop shop where all they have is they have that urn of coffee. They're not making anything else with that urn. They're making coffee with that urn. And then there are many opinions that would be lenient, that if it's plain coffee, if it's not flavored coffee, then there are opinions that would permit that. They don't have a problem of bishul nochri. There are very few items left, which today you can still buy. It used to be that they'd buy everything without a hechsher. When I was a kid, they were just coming out with hechsher. You go back 3-4 decades ago, most items didn't have a kosher symbol. You knew which items had kosher components and which didn't. Today, everything gets complicated. Our salt has enzymes, has a million things in it. Our sugar, you know what sugar is made out of? What's sugar made out of? Beets, right? It's not even made out of sugar cane anymore. The regular white sugar is made out of beets. So everything's complicated. So today, you really need a kosher symbol on almost everything you buy. But there are a few exceptions. And if you go to Europe, they have lists that they tell you what you can buy. So as far as coffee, so there are opinions that are lenient that you could buy it even though it's made by a non-Jew. So today we learned, let's just review what we see today. We saw that cleaning oneself, so long as you're not going into it so far to see that you're so beautiful and perfect, so then that's okay. That might even be a mitzvah, a person's maintaining cleanliness. We saw that initially Rebbe said you're not allowed to insulate, to wrap up something cold to maintain its coolness. But then he heard from Rabbi Shmuel, Rabbi Yossi, that the father, Rabbi Yossi, permitted it. And then Rabbi permitted that on Shabbos. We discussed the Ashkenazi opinion that hatmana, wrapping something up, is only if you wrap it from all sides. We discussed, Rabbi Papa brought how Rebbe and Rabbi Yossi were so fond of one another. Rabbi Yossi would respect Rebbe and listen to his shir like a student. Rebbe respected Rabbi Yossi, that if he heard a quote in his name, he said, okay, the elder already said his word, so that I take it back. And then we saw the story of Rav Nachman, who told his servant Daru, he told him to put away something cold, it shouldn't lose its cool, and he asked for water that was heated by a non-Jewish baker. And we saw that even though Rav Ami was upset, technically, halachically, it was okay, because Rav said anything that's edible raw is permissible, even though it was heated or baked or cooked by a non-Jew, again, provided that it's kosher. That it's not cooked or baked with lizards or who knows what. and then we saw the final point, that when you're a person that people respect and look up to, you have to take it a step further. People look at him and they say, if he could do that, I could do 2 steps more. So that's why a person has to be more careful. Yes?
Just to go back to the point so there's really anything you can eat if it's edible raw, then what, it doesn't matter if who cooks it?
Then if everything else is kosher, then it's okay, yeah.
So that could be a lot of things. So you could eat beef raw. Like, technically, you take a steak, but you could grind it up raw.
No, people it's very
It's not a custom, but it's very hungry,
and there's no other way to do it, you know, but...
But it's not like if you go to a restaurant and see beef tartare on a menu, it's not like an unheard of thing.
Hamburger with egg white and a bunch of stuff and spices, but you're right, like sushi. I guess technically you could.
Also technically, it's like you technically eat... So yeah, actually, that is a good point, because like, you can technically eat the material raw. It'd be very weird to eat it raw unless you mix it with other ingredients to make a specific thing. But that's...
I owe you an answer. I don't know. I don't know. Meaning about tuna, they argued that the only reason we eat it cooked is because the law requires it. But they said that every person who goes there eats it raw. They don't wait for it to be cooked, and they say it's very delicious. The Talmud says that misha da'ato yafa, people who are pleasant in their approach to life, eat meat raw. So our sages meant to say people who are crass and more like an animal than a human. But they didn't want to word it that way, so they worded it positively. Right, that's exactly what they were doing. They said, people, they were saying it nicely. That it sounds like the average person wouldn't, but we find in the laws of Muktzah and the laws of Shabbos that raw meat is not considered Muktzah because there are people who eat it raw. So I owe you an answer on that. It could be that it's not, because it's so uncommon, that's why it's not considered edible raw. The average person doesn't want raw meat. Could be that's why, but I'm not sure. Yeah.
When you have got some fancy restaurant capacity, right? But when you started the conversation, it was enacted, if it's kosher, we don't eat with a non-Jew cooking to prevent social gatherings. This is all about that.
I hear you, but you still have criterion. I think the reason is...
The reason we still hope.
Right. Right, but the Chazal gave us criterium.
And
is it better to buy from a Jew? So the Torah says, Okanomi Adamitecha, from which we derive that preferably a Jew should patronize a fellow Jew, give him the business. But sometimes if you go to the supermarket or the Walmart, you could get the kosher meat for 25% less. So then right, the question is how much you have to invest for that mitzvah. It's definitely a good thing to do, but you don't have to go that far. You don't have to incur 25% loss every time you buy from the Jewish butcher. If you get equally kosher meat from the non-Jew, so yes, there is an idea to patronize the Jew, but you don't have to incur a huge loss for that.
In the Walmart, there would be
package, right.
It's going